Sounds kind of science fiction-y, this walk, space time. History, yes, okay, good.
The Bible talks about our bodies having value and it matters what we do with our bodies to God.
Yes, that's right, good.
I was just thinking, God is spirit, he's created a physical world, but he's breathed life into us. So we are spiritual, but we are also physical.
Yes, creation. It's part of it too, isn't it? And creation of our bodies, yes.
And not only do we believe that Christ physically rose from the dead, but we believe that we also will physically rise from the dead.
Yes, and Christ is physical resurrection. And yeah, good, you got there. But then let's turn back for a moment and look at those definitions, because we've actually been defined out of existence in these definitions, haven't we? Because the people who write dictionaries do not understand Christianity. I mean, their aim is just to tell you how people use the word. And if you take the first one and say, it's a tendency, that allows us still to be in existence, right? There's a tendency. But see, we value the body, we value material possessions as part of our spiritual possessions. We don't have quite the same division between the spiritual and the physical. Your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. So we have the two things united, which means our body is an important thing, and what we do with our body is important. That's because of the creation, that's because of the resurrection. And so we're a very physical religion. Who thought of a non-physical religion? Yes, come on. What was you?
I'm not sure if it is like...
Well, that's all right. I'll agree with you, whatever you say. You know that, don't you?
Buddhism?
Buddhism, yes. Buddhism is not a physical religion. It's a very spiritual religion. It's a self-denying of the physical, right? Its aim and goal in the end is Om, where you just are part of the world spirit. Yeah? That's right.
I'm not sure if this counts as a religion, but Platoism?
Platonism is definitely a spiritual, not a physical. The physical is a perception of the spiritual reality. But the spiritual reality is the true one, depending whether you're a nominalist or not. But yes, it's a true one. The real one is the spiritual. The physical is just an illusion. Yeah? Any others? Hinduism? Of course, Buddhism, Hinduism go together. Hare Krishnas. You'll meet there the Hindus you can meet around here, westernized versions. They don't believe that you exist physically at all. It's an illusion. It's Maya. It's an illusion put out by the devil to distract you from spiritual reality. Can you think of any Christianized version of that kind of spirituality?
Cartesian skepticism.
Sorry?
Cartesian skepticism.
It's Cartesian skepticism. We'll go there. Yes. But there's a denomination. A heretic denomination that is totally spiritual.
Gnosticism.
Well, Gnosticism would take us in that direction in the early years, but it's alive and well today.
And Jehovah's Witnesses?
Jehovah's Witnesses? No, I'm not sure they do.
Christian Science?
Christian Science, yes. Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, and the health of science. You don't exist physically, it's just an illusion. And that's why when you get sick, well, you're not sick because there is no body to get sick with. So what you've got to do is sit down, read Mary Baker Eddy, and contemplate until you realise that your body is not there anyway, so it's not sick. And so that's how you solve the sickness in Christian Science. So they're spiritual, and they fit easily enough with this kind of understanding. But no, we are physical, and our body is a spiritual body. That's Jesus is raised as a spiritual body. But you mustn't take the body, out of the physical, out of what we're talking about. Okay. To help you understand that, whoa, just about to head into Angus territory.
Hi everyone, I think we're hitting the nail on the head. Christianity is material.
You're looking at me, so I'm coming in.
Yeah.
I might be older than him, but I can still walk this far. Now, Okay, well, I want to move us on then a little bit to that economic materialism. That is, what do non-Christians hate about economic materialism? See, in all of our discussions this term, we're looking at what, how we can turn the conversation from the symptoms of the problems that people see in the world to the Christian diagnosis of that problem. And I want to suggest to you that a lot of non-Christians don't like economic materialism. And so we can agree with the problems of economic materialism and then turn the conversation. But now, in what way do non-Christians hate economic material? What is it that they say, oh, that's just materialism, it's awful? And away you go. This is a much easier question. Okay, let's go with this one, shall we? It's all kinds of answers, endless actually. You could get the answers here, so let's pick a few this way. Patrick?
It encourages envy as the only way to measure success is of material possession.
It encourages envy, the only way of measuring success is, how much you possess. Yeah. He who has the most at the end wins.
Valuing stuff over people?
Valuing stuff over people, yes.
Destroys the environment?
It destroys the environment, yes.
Limited resources, not everyone gets everything?
Not everyone gets everything, right, okay.
So many advertisements?
Yeah, our whole advertising industry, yes.
Phrase, money can't buy happiness?
Money can't buy happiness, but it helps. No, okay, yes. It creates class divide. What's your next answer? Okay, what's your next?
People think it's unfair that some people have more material possessions than others.
People think it's unfair that some have more than others, yes?
It's never enough.
It's never enough, ain't that the truth?
Envy, jealousy.
It prevents you from escaping the material world.
It prevents you from escaping the material world.
From a spiritualist point of view.
A spiritualist point of view, okay.
The fact that things are like planned to be obsolete, so phones and stuff die really quickly.
Things are planned obsolescence. Well done, Kyle. Just stole my thunder, but well done.
Comparison.
Sorry?
Comparison.
Comparisons between people. But women never do that, so it's just the men thing that, yeah. Comparison, yes. What other ones have people got?
Exploits cheap labour,
yes, in the extreme slavery, but there's a long way between. Yeah.
Maybe that they see it in themselves.
Sorry?
They see these things in themselves and find that frustrating.
I still haven't got it, John. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, they dislike these things, but they see it in themselves.
They deceive themselves, yes. They like these things, yeah. But yes, it's self-deception, isn't it? Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a great captivity, is economic. Let's look at planned obsolescence. Thank you, friend. There it is. That's the exact model that I was given as a wedding present in 1969. And it still works. We've never replaced it. It works today as just as well as it did when we got it in 1969. But you can't buy one today that is going to last you 52 years. Right? They're now all Teflon coated, and the Teflon wears out within 12 months, and the whole machine packs it in within 5 to 10 years. This one has worked for 52 years, and I think it'll see me out, really. I think I'll be able to pass it on to one of my children or grandchildren, because it's just, that is extraordinary. Here is a movie that was on the subject back in 1951. The Man in the White Suit. Anybody ever seen The Man in the White Suit? No. It's an extraordinary movie, very funny movie. If you ever do get a chance to see it, it's worth doing, but it's hard to even find on the streaming services. I love that the picture is in red and white because it's black and white, the movie in those days. The Man in the White Suit is a scientist who invents a cloth that cannot get dirty. which is why the suit's white, because it can't take any colours on, and never perishes. This is a great discovery for humanity, except it puts everybody out of business. Puts all the bosses out of the clothing business, puts the labourers out of the clothing business, ruins the economy, the government gets upset with him, and so he's running because everybody chases him. They try and seduce him with money, they try and beat him up, they try and, because no one likes the suit that doesn't need replacing. That's the pits. The whole economy is built on constant replacement of things. Nowhere more so than your telephone, right? Or your computer. My battery died in this computer. I found out it's going to cost $250 to replace the battery. But then we were told that they're not going to actually do any work on this computer because it's too old. So it's now put in the obsolete case of the Apple people. And so if anything else goes wrong, tough. It's 7 years old. To replace it is $2,000. It keeps the economy rolling, but when I buy it, because I'm the kind of person who bought got given a wedding present that's lasted 50 years, I expect my computer to last 50 years. And that's absurd, isn't it? Because they're changing so fast, but it's not just they're changing, they're not aiming to make them to last. The telephone's not intended to last. So what I'm doing is I'm leasing this computer from Apple at roughly $300 a year. 7 years, that's it, $2,000, you know. So you don't buy a computer, you just lease it from Apple for $300 a year. And so that is classic materialism. Right? We just think all the time in terms of money, planned obsolescence, it runs in everything. But it's a deeper problem. Now, Ross Gittins has been for many years the editor of the economics editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. Right? He's an interesting man. His parents were Salvation Army officers, but he gave up on Christianity many years ago. But it keeps popping out. He can't help himself. His raising in the Salvation Army gives him values that don't quite fit with being a materialist. And some time ago he wrote this article. He said, here are my conclusions on how to be happy. Based on equal parts on the opinions of experts and my experience, if you think you detect my salvo upbringing showing through, just remember it's a sermon preached primarily to myself. Happiness is the goal of economics in a utilitarian world. If you're not a Christian, what is the aim and goal? Happiness. Maximisation of happiness if you are a kind of social utilitarian rather than just my own personal happiness. But the trouble is, economists don't know what makes you happy. So of recent times, they've been reading a lot of psychologists to find out what makes you happy. But psychologists don't know what makes you happy either. Although of recent times, positive psychology, because of Mr. Professor Seligman, has come out. And he said, we're not interested in kind of fixing up people who are... We're trying to work out how to make people happy. And Mr. Gittins has been very thankful for the psychologist showing him how to be happy. That's why he talks about experts and he talks about his experience. But you want to know how to be happy? First, focus on the human. Not the material. This is the most basic mistake we've been making in preoccupations with economic efficiency and ever-increasing production and consumption of goods and services. There's the first thing. See, what does GDP actually measure? Well, it measures gross domestic product. But is that happiness? Is that all there is to life? Is that what counts? Economists have been counting the wrong things. In fact, we've turned economics into money. When the word economics means household management. But anything that is not anything that's not financial, we don't include in the subject of economics. There used to be a subject taught nearly always only to girls, called home economics. Anyone do home economics these days? Still around. No, they're old folk. It's gone, you see, which really was about cooking and sewing and how to run a household. Not about the finances. But that's what the word economics means, of course. He goes on. The evidence is clear that our greatly improved material standard of living hasn't made any of us happier. There you go, from what you were saying. And it's not just that our heightened materialism has failed to work. It's not just that. There's evidence that those who strive most for wealth tend to live the lower well-being. It's just as clear that our preoccupation with earning has tended to crowd out our relationships. See, the old saying is that when people are on their deathbed, they don't really want to know what's happening in the office. They want their family around them. But you spend your lifetime in the office ignoring your family. But suddenly, when life actually matters, it's the family. It's the relationships, it's the friendships, it's the love that matters. But materialism doesn't produce that. There's the fundamental, in fact, materialism tells against spending time and effort with family. Well, here's the economist seeing the problem of materialism. Not from a Christian point of view, although it is really because he's an old Salvation Army officer's kid. He can't help himself. You know, he's got those Christian ideals rumbling around in the background of his head. Very sad. I understand he had gone back to church at recent times. There was an article in the paper this week. I can't remember which paper, it doesn't matter. They're all as bad as each other. But this was an interesting article by Professor John Aitken, who is an expert in reproduction biology. And he says, with the Industrial Revolution in the 1700s, the world embarked on a new socio-economic journey which carried us into the modern industrialised 21st century, and there have been many good developments. But now there are many factors associated with modern 21st century living which are compromising female and male fertility. It's a fascinating thing, you see. Possessions ultimately don't make us happy. Possessions always require maintenance. You know, I've said before, I'll say it again, two happiest days in a man's life, the day he buys his first boat and the day he sells his first boat. Right? The possession is a pain, especially a boat, which requires enormous amounts of maintenance just to keep the thing afloat. And so, but we've replaced possessions now with experiences. I'm going to travel and photograph the Taj Mahal. I'll do a selfie so I can see myself with the Taj Mahal behind me, so everybody will know I've been to the Taj Mahal. Whoopie-doo. Yeah. What a stupid idea that somehow your life is a fuller life because you have stood outside a building and taken a selfie. It's a ridiculous notion, but we're saying experiences because people have found possessions don't work, but experiences turn out to be just as materialistic, because guess how much it costs to get to the Taj Mahal, and guess how much it costs for your latest updated iPhone number 26 or whatever it is that you actually have. But there's this other side. Our materialistic growth, which has done lots of good things for us, you know, we wouldn't be sitting in the lights and all the rest of it without material. It's done a lot of good things for us, but it's affecting fertility. Man, this is going to be a bit scary, this one tonight, but hang in there. I'll say something tonight that's going to change someone's behaviour. Some men, immediate's behaviour will change, but you'll see. He says, we need to wake up to our own biology. That can't be changed. We need to change the social structure around it rather than trying to force the reverse. We're so used to fixing things, we think we can fix our biology. But we can't. It's there. What we've got to do is get our lifestyle in accordance with creation rather than change creation in accordance with our lifestyle. Now, do you hear how you can turn Christian conversation? See, this man's giving a Christian diagnosis. I don't know if he's a Christian or not. But he's giving a Christian diagnosis here when he's saying we've got to come in terms with creation. Because one of the great things that happens when you become a Christian is you find the Creator, and then you start living the way the Creator has created you to live. Changes the direction of life. And he goes on, we've witnessed the rising tide of female education, but the trouble is that as women become more educated and enter the workforce, there's naturally not the same impetus to have children. They've been forced to choose between pursuing a career and having children. This is a 21st century tragedy. Don't worry, girls, the men are going to get it worse in a moment. This is a 21st century tragedy. Grasp it, dear sisters. We Christians understand that we have been made to have children. That's how our bodies are created, because that's what God wants of us. It doesn't mean everyone has to have 300, you know, 20 or 30 will do. But you don't have to have, you know, every individual is not good. But that's the nature of our created order. That is the expectation of our created order. But our society is making it an undesirable. So when you have Careers Day at your school, the girls are never told about the career called motherhood. You know, you can have a career in law, you can have a career in science, in aeronautical engineering, you have a career at all. You can become Prime Minister, because we keep changing Prime Ministers often enough. There's enough time for us all to have a go at that. We can all do all kinds of things. But motherhood is not in the list, because that's not an acceptable activity anymore. You see, the downplaying of motherhood, well, it's a 21st century tragedy. Spilt out in, you've got to finish the HSC so that you can go to university and do a double degree so that you can get a good career. And motherhood just gets pushed further and further away. So that he says, in Australia, some 20,000 women in their early 40s undertake IVF therapy each year, with less than 5% successfully falling pregnant. That is an enormous amount of heartache. If you really, I mean, I'm an old man who's pastored congregations for 40 or 50 years. I've spent many an hour listening to many a woman howling in the horror of not being able to have children because they started too late. That's not to say anything of the fact that once you pass 35, the chances of abnormalities in your children increases radically as well. We're denying our biology. Menopause is a reality. There's no point trying to pretend it's not. It is a reality. Our bodies are dying bodies, and they go through certain phases, and there is a phase of which fertility is great. And we've set up a social structure, thanks to materialism, where we avoid fertility during the period in which our bodies are most fertile. And then we wonder why our lives are so miserable. You see, it's a terrible mistake. Brothers, do take responsibility for your sisters, won't you? It's important. And so he produced this graph. Since 1960, it's a very bad graph because it doesn't go down to zero. Always be suspicious of graphs that don't go down to zero, right? Because it makes it, when you don't have it down to zero, it makes the trend look much bigger than it is, right? But since 1960, jobs for women have gone from, what are we going to say, 36% or something like that, up to nearly 60%. At the same time, birth per woman, as the birth rate as it's called, has shifted in the 1960s of 3.5 children per woman. I don't know whether you get the legs or the arms or which half you get, but it's 3.5, down to its present state of 1.5. And of course, once we drop below 2.1, we're no longer replacing ourselves. The two things go hand in hand. There's the social construction we've made that have made it so dire. However, Professor Atkins is a real expert in male reproduction in particular. And once a man gets over 40, he has 30% less chance of becoming a father than under 30. Because your sperm count declines that rapidly over 40. And as you get older, the number of malformed sperm increase as well, and so the number of children problems. So girls, don't marry an old man. That's another mistake to make in life, because that's worse. And what's more, men who are older have boys who are infertile. So it actually reinforces the problem. And it's worse still, brothers, because there's been a decline in sperm count around the world since 1972, so that there is now only 50% of what we were like in 1972. Who was alive here in 1972? Well, you see, I'm a much more vigorous man than, but I'm not really now because I'm old, but I was then. You see, 50%. This has meant really significant infertility, not just with women, but men. Now, why is the male sperm count going down?
Pollution.
Yes, which in particular?
Plastic.
Plastics. Brothers, do you drink from plastic bottles? It's a mistake. The more plastic that gets into your system, the less your sperm count. If ever I've got a motivation to stop drinking from plastic bottles, I would have thought dropping sperm count would be pretty high in most males' kind of perception. You know? Take a metal thing. Take glass, but don't drink out of plastics. Yeah, plastics is the problem. So, you sisters, you nearly always hear me raving on about the problem of crossing 30 without having children. Well, men, you've got this big problem, and it's getting worse. And it's getting worse fast as a society. Anecdotally, again, I can tell you that's the truth. When I was a young man, none of my brothers that I knew of ever had difficulty with fertility. Sometimes their wives did, but they didn't. Now, an increasing number of men talk to me about the fact that they're not able to reproduce. They've married, but they can't reproduce because their sperm count is too low. Something that, I tell you, when I was your age, never heard of such a thing. Whereas now, two of them have told me in this last week. I mean, it's just a new phenomenon that's come from pollution. But again, we are reconstructing the world on the material basis and not paying attention to the human basis. That's the kind of problems that we have. But it just goes on and on. See, what is it that people don't like about? Well, it's greed, it's exploitation of it's division of riches, it's conspicuous consumption. You know, you've got to have your big ocean-going yacht, etc. None of you mentioned materialism corrupts governments. It's even worse than corrupting governments. It corrupts democracy. You can't get elected without being rich or without persuading rich people to fund you. And so the teal candidates all had a rich man give them $1 million each and they got elected. You might say, well, they had good policies and all the rest of it, but the independents who didn't have $1 million backing didn't get elected. There's a direct correlation between those who had the money and those who got elected. I mean, it corrupts government in so many ways. We have to set up ICAC down the road because the longer any party's in power, the more likely it is that one of their ministers has been corrupted by greed, by opportunities that are there. It corrupts sport. Professional sport is not the thing it used to be. Australia was beaten by England at the rugby union. That's all right, I don't mind. I don't support the Wallabies now that Israel Folau can't play for them. So I don't care. But the coach of the English team was an Australian. And when he's leaving the ground, somebody from the crowd calls out, "Traitor." And he got really upset and threw a hissy fit at being called a traitor. And to defend him, the rugby union officialdom said, "Well, we didn't want him to be our coach. We got someone else to be the coach." And so he plies his trade wherever he can get a job. And he got a job in England, so good luck to him. Okay, that's all right. But it's no longer a national team. When our coach is a Kiwi and their coach is one of ours, in what sense are you playing as a... It doesn't represent Australia anymore. It represents certain economic interests. That's what you have as games. The Cleveland Browns are a football game team in America. But of course in America, they're real professional sports. They're owned by individuals. In fact, Manly, who's been in trouble this week, is owned by an individual who happens to be in New York at the moment. But the Cleveland Browns did very poorly, and so someone from Boston bought them and moved them to Boston. Well, how can the Cleveland Browns be the Cleveland Browns when the Cleveland Browns are in Boston? I understand they've been bought back again by somebody else, so they're back in Clark, but I don't follow American football that closely. It's just, you see, you no longer have the same thing. We don't play cricket against every nation. Why don't we play cricket against every nation? Well, because the smaller nations do not bring a big enough audience to pay for the advertising. So we only play cricket against certain nations. And the reason we play the time we play is because of the advertisers needing the audience to be on the television. Because going out to the game is not what's important, it's the television advertising that is really important. So it goes on and on. In every aspect of our life, materialism reigns. When I was a boy, my older brother went to Sydney University. Not Peter, I've got an older brother who's a real older brother. Well, I did, he's dead now. My older brother went to Sydney University and he invited us over there for a day called Open Day, where we could all look and see what was happening at the university. Today it's called Careers Day. Because you don't go to university to be educated, you go to university to get a career. Some people, as a byproduct, occasionally accidentally get educated. But that's just a byproduct that some silly people fall into. And if they do, that's good. But everybody gets a career, because that's what matters. See how money just is running everything, corrupting everything as it goes, and doesn't really meet human. The world understands it. They don't like it. They don't know what to do about it. So, come back with me to another thing then. What are the consequences of philosophical materialism? And I've just stuck the definition back up again there for you. Ed's definition. It's the theory that there is nothing else and that even our brains are just matter twitching. What are the consequences of that? Quickly talk to each other, because we're going to do this very quickly because it's dead easy and obvious. Okay, I said it was going to be quick. What's a quick? What's a consequence?
Nihilism,
yes, that nothing is nothing, it's just meaningless nothingness.
It ignores the presence of God.
It ignores the presence of God. This is atheism. You can't be a philosophical Christian materialist, can you? Because it really is solid atheism, yes?
It immediately, the only logical conclusion of materialism is hedonism.
The only logical conclusion would be hedonism. There are some others, but you're right. Yes, it leads directly to hedonism. Yes, that is the pursuit of pleasure. Yeah?
There's no right or wrong.
There's no right or wrong, no, just fun, 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 under the sun, where it's all meaningless.
You're not responsible for your actions because it's just things firing in
you. Yeah, I can't be blamed. I mean, just because I bash her over the head, well, hey, it's just my brain twitching. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it's got no morality to it. I'm not going to do that, dear, it's all right. Yeah?
Yeah, there's nothing that can provide the basis for what is morally right and what is morally wrong.
No, because it's just twitching. You twitch that there's a thing called truth. I twitch that there's no such thing as called truth. Well, my twitch is better than your twitch, isn't it? Yeah?
Yeah. Peter Singer's thoughts.
Peter Singer's
thoughts.
Thoughts. What about them?
Pop up if you're a materialist.
They tend to pop up if they're a materialist.
Yeah, like his don't you say he's abortion after birth and stuff.
Yes, abortion after birth. Well, that's all right, isn't it? You know, if you don't like the baby you just got, well, you know, out comes the baby. Looks like dad. Get rid of that one. Have another one. See if you can do better next time. Yes. So you got no morality, no meaning, and it does lead to, well, it leads to economic materialism. Leads to gathering up possessions because it leads to hedonism, the pleasure. Right? If you're a Buddhist or a Stoic, it doesn't lead to pleasure. It leads to no suffering. It's not a pursuit of pleasure, it's avoidance of suffering. But it's the same thing in a sense, right? That is, the only thing that exists are my twitches, my nervous system. So what I've got to do is try and live as much as I can to have pleasurable nervous twitching. Right? Avoid the suffering, enjoy the pleasure. The great ones are the Epicureans in this. The Epicurus, you know, said, well, there was before I was born and there will be after I'm dead. The only life I've got is the life here now. And what I do is enjoy it as much as I can. But enjoyment is always matched with suffering. You know, I get drunk, I have an overhang. I'm overhung the next day. So the aim is then drink enough to enjoy it, but not so much that I'll have a headache and vomit the next day. I eat too much. Well, that's, you know, so I eat just enough. In fact, the problem with Epicureanism, you spent so much time doing mathematical equations as to how much to eat and not, and how many friends to have and not, and how many times to go out and not, that you don't actually enjoy anything. I mean, it's just a terrible, constant mathematical equation to maximize the pleasure and minimize the pain at the same time, and for no good reason, because there is no reason. The reason doesn't get. Reason is a figment of your twitching. It's not actually there. And so it leads to hedonistic materialism, having better experiences. But it also leads to another thing, a reaction. Now, what's the reaction? Spiritual asceticism is the reaction. I can't make sense of the world just as the world, just as physical. There's nothing else. And I don't enjoy the physical pleasures all the time. Eat, drink and be merry for tomorrow I die doesn't make any sense. And so you get this terrific reaction of people who want to lock themselves away in monasteries, deny themselves any physical pleasures, and so you create the spiritual is all that matters and the physical is evil. All physical pleasure is evil, according to the Hare Krishnas. Right? All physical pleasure, including sex, that's evil, because it's trying to persuade you away from the spiritual reality. And so the world doesn't like materialism, economic materialism, but economic materialism is the result of philosophical materialism, atheism. That's exactly where it comes from. So join with the world in agreeing with what's wrong with economic materialism, but tell them how you can enjoy the physical world without becoming a meaningless person. It's by having the Creator. That's how. But we've still got to understand what the Bible does teach about materialism. However, I think, well done, been hard work, you need a break. But before we have a break, Edmund's going to give us our word from our sponsors. Are we all done? Okay, a little booklet passing around. There's so much we're going to do in the next little while that we just thought we'd go old technology and look at a booklet. But also, our student ministers don't do enough. And so I just thought we'd give them a job to do. They've all got to give their talk in 3 minutes, and then the bell rings and we stop. I haven't got a bell. Then I'll whistle Dixie or something, and then we'll we'll stop. So we're going through, I think it's about 9 talks in the next few minutes as they exercise self-control. And you'll see that there are 3 lines for you to take notes on the bottom of each talk. Because the theory is they're only going to give you 3 points. That right? So we're going to start with, they won't be reading all these passages, that's also why I've given it to you, so you can go home and think about it and look it up later and see whether their 3 points really do match the passage. Has everyone got one? We've got a couple of spares here. Everyone got one? Okay, we're going to begin 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Okay, you look in the watch?
Sure.
Good, thank you. Over the page to page 4. And there we have Romans 1, 18 to 34, and the 3 points I want to draw your attention to are, 1, people know God. The reason people know God is because he made them to know him. He made himself known to us. It's not because we're clever, not because we can work it out, but God made himself known to humans in a way that he hasn't made himself known to elephants or donkeys or... He's made himself known to us so that we actually know him. You see it there in verses 18, 19. Second point, people suppress the truth. It's not so much denying the truth as suppressing the truth. They're trying to just ignore the truth, pretend that it's not the truth, close their eyes. I can't see you, God, because my eyes are closed. And so they claim to be wise, but they're not, they're fools. Why are they doing this? Well, verse 18, 19, verse 20, 21, 22 tell us, because of their wicked. The wrath of God's being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. And verse 21, for although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. That's what suppressing the truth does to you. And thirdly, life spirals towards folly. Life spirals downwards towards increasing folly. Because of wickedness, they suppress the truth. Because they've suppressed the truth, they're no longer facing reality, and God gives them up to their wickedness. So we have that famous phrase that occurs 3 times, verse 24, 26 and 28, all says, therefore God gave them over to the very things they wanted to do. Wickedness leads to suppressing the truth, leads to claiming to be wise when in fact you're foolish, and means God now, instead of making himself known to you, gives you up to the very wickedness that you wanted in the first place. And so you go round and round in ever decreasing godliness into greater and greater folly. So the first main thing for the night, the first 3 talks, are all about the arrogant folly of philosophical materialism. All through the Bible, in all kinds of places, we've just shown you several of those passages. Okay? We're now going to move to the second set. The second set is actually looking at Jesus and Jesus' attack on materialism. Edmund, have I taken more than 3 minutes?
You took 2 minutes 57.
There you go. Not just under 3 minutes, but accurately. Okay, over on page 6 is the third of the Jesus attacks on materialism. Again, it's part of Matthew 6, part of the Sermon on the Mount. First point, that non-Christian life is the pursuit of food and drink and clothing. You see it there in verse 32. For the pagans run after these things. What things? What you shall eat, what you shall drink, what you shall wear in verse 31. When it talks about worry here, it's not talking about the anxiety state that psychologists are dealing with. It's talking about worrying, about running after these things, making your life about these things. And that's what pagans do. If you don't believe me, go into a paper shop and look at the magazines. The magazine's all about food, all about drink, all about clothing. Go up to the good living guide in the newspaper and it's about what you eat, what you drink, what you wear. Ah, there are other things too, you know, what kind of car you drive and so on, but it's really basically the same kinds of things. That's what pagans live their lives for. How many cooking shows are there on television? And remember, the food that you eat, the drink that you drink, it's all just pre-sewerage material. Huh? Because within a few minutes, that's what's going to happen to it. You treat it at that end with the quality that it deserves. But people spend their life about it. Second thing is, but God is the one who provides. He provides for us all. We don't see it because we think we provide it. Woolworths provides it, Coles provides it, but actually it's God who provides it. When the fire comes, when the flood comes, when the famine comes, when the drought comes, we don't have. Here in Australia we have so abundantly, we don't realise the African problem. A drought in East Africa means death to babies, means death to the weak and frail, death on large numbers. That's what happens. It's what's happening in Afghanistan at the moment. It's what's threatening in Sri Lanka at the moment. Do not be deceived. It's God who provides. He makes the birds to have food, the flowers and the grass to bloom. Nobody actually lives by subsistence, by their own ability. It's always God who gives us even our abilities. Third point is, life is more than food and clothes. Same point that is just made back in Luke's gospel. And so, verse 25, it's more than food and clothes. Therefore, seek the kingdom and seek righteousness. Not because these things don't matter, because you'll see in verse 34, God will look after these things. Make your passion, make your desire, make your direction of thinking, make the orientation of your life the kingdom of God and righteousness, rather than making what you eat, what you drink, what you wear the priority of what your life is going to be about. Jesus has very strong views on materialism. Economic materialism, isn't it? It's not philosophical. It's economic materialism. Jesus is a great critic of it. But not only Jesus, the Apostle Paul. So our third main section of talks is going to be on the Apostle Paul on Christian materialism. Because Jesus is attacking materialism in the context of Judaism. Paul is discussing materialism in the context of the Christian. In some ways makes it easier for us to follow. And I think it's anger. That's when they come. Okay. The last of these talks is 1 Timothy 6. Command those who are rich in this present world. Well, point number one, not to be arrogant. Wealth gives you arrogance. One stage I owned a home unit that I was renting out to people, and because there'd been a terrible hailstorm in my area, I needed to go and rent a home unit. When I went to the real estate agent as an owner, they ushered me into a private office, gave me a cup of coffee and talked about what was happening. When I went in as a renter, they stood me at the front gate, at the front of the desk, and they asked me all the personal questions about my finances in front of the other people who were waiting. You keep on being a rich person, being treated like royalty, you become arrogant. You don't realise how the other half lives. It was a real shock to me to see. I took my business away from that real estate agency because I thought they treated the tenants so appallingly. Right? But it is normal. It's very normal. Rich people become entitled in their thinking without even knowing that they have. Don't become arrogant and don't put your hope in your wealth. I'm safe, I'm secure. You're not. In fact, the crazy part is, you know, it's a real spin doctoring thing. You know, Greenland is the place that's actually full of ice, and Iceland is the place that's full of green. Well, not full, but, you know, it was a spin doctor to get people to go and live in Greenland when in actual fact, and to avoid the good place called Iceland. The Danes did it. You never trust Danes. That's a very bad group of people. And now I'm putting the two Danes down here. We're just having a little conversation here. Anyway, that spin doctoring happens with finances because they talk about having securities. There's nothing secure in a security. It doesn't exist. Right? And so don't put your hope there. Use it for enjoyment, yeah, because God has given us this world to enjoy. But don't put your hope in it. Second point is, do good. Be rich in good deeds. Be generous in your sharing. If you're someone who's got good money, great, give it away, because God trusts generous givers with more money to give. Now, I've got some friends who are very, very wealthy people, and they fund Christian ministries all over the world. That is what God wants rich people to do, to fund generously. And thirdly, the treasures that you have are actually in the coming age. So use your money now that you will receive the real treasures in the age to come. Notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say give up your money. He doesn't say the rich young ruler, go give everything away, come follow me. He says use your money as a Christian. It's there for your enjoyment. It's there for you to be generous and do good deeds with. See, we Christians are materialists. You can be a rich Christian. But if you are a rich Christian, you'll be a generous Christian. That'll be at the heart of your way of life. The Bible has lots about materialism, doesn't it? I mean, we've just scratched the surface. My 3 minutes are finished. Go over the back page and you will see there an advertisement for Trajectory, which you're coming to. But above that, for further thinking, for I didn't write this, a great talk on materialism given at KYLC in 2008, I think it was. There is this talk I gave, and you can find it at philipjensen.com resources materialism, as you see there. I listened to it this week, just in preparation for this. I thought, I gave a talk about materialism years ago. So I found it, I listened to it at double speed. Isn't it fantastic? You can listen to double speak and you don't sound like the chipmunks. And but I took it in at double speed because I wrote it and gave the talk. But you guys, you could take it in at double speed because you've got very fast brains. However, it's an hour long talk, so that's a good reason to go double speed, or one and a half, or whatever it is. I have a friend who always listens to all his lectures at triple speed. I'll be very interested to see if he passes. Okay, so materialism. Philosophical materialism, atheism, gives rise to economic materialism, which even the world doesn't like. So we can talk to the world about how economic materialism is really stupid and ridiculous, and then say, well, look where it comes from. But the reaction is not, okay, throw materialism out. No, no, the reaction is, accept God is the creator of the material world, and accept God's resurrection of the bodies for the age to come. We have the answer for materialism that the atheists have created in their arrogant folly. Get the drift for the evening? There's a lot of work to do, though, to actually know what the Bible's saying on this subject. So, don't we have good student ministers? They're terrific. Okay, here we go for 1 to 9. We'll see how good